The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us today. And before we get started, I just wanted to remind you that just because we talk about certain topics on the air or on a website that involve real estate investing or taxation or zero tax math, as an example, that these are concepts that we want to expose you to at a high level. It's not meant for you to take action on your own without consulting with your existing advisors to make sure that you understand the content or the topic or the strategy, and that more importantly, your understanding syncs up with your specific goals and objectives. And hopefully you have someone that you can consult on these areas of real estate taxation, real estate private partnership, syndication, and zero tax math. And if you don't, you're more than welcome to go to our website at beaplanner.com to the forms link. And if you'll fill out the first form, step one, client profile, we'll be happy to engage on a phone call to discuss your specific circumstances and how we might, if we might, be able to help you achieve your goals and objectives. We're going to take some time today. I did want to talk about what's going on in Congress, at least news-wise, before I proceed with syndication information. I want to talk about the risk factors, since the real estate private partnership syndications seemingly are starting to thaw out in terms of the market. We're seeing more and more, and I wanted to discuss in the context of why this particular creature, real estate private partnership syndications involving multifamily, is something you may want to consider, and especially if you're looking to do a Roth conversion with your pre-tax 401 funds or IRA funds. I'm going to get into the risk factors that are the reason that we're able to undertake Roth conversions after you've invested in such options, to then get a much lower conversion cost than if you were simply investing marketplace type securities, be it stocks, mutual funds, etc. And you know, we've talked about this topic many times on the air. I rarely get into the level of detail on the risk factors. We usually just mention two or three of the larger risk factors, like the lack of marketability, your ability to sell your holdings at any point before the exit that someone else will usually make the decision on. That'd be the syndicator or lead partner. And then we also mentioned the lack of majority control, but there's a number of other ones that weigh heavy, which is a good thing if you're trying to convert funds, but it's also something that all too often investors, especially new investors that don't really know what they're looking at when they look at a private placement memorandum, tend to either get bogged down in the analysis or they just move on, figuring that, hey, if this is being offered through a friendly, meaning investor slash mentor platform that they have joined, that it must be okay. And I guess I'm wanting to make you rethink that plan. It's not a strategy to put your head in the sand. And if you do, you're going to be surprised at some point. But so let's take a moment or two and talk about what's going on in Congress. I think now we're on Plan C, if I am counting correctly. Let me go. I think Fox Business had a good example of, or a good summary, rather, of what's going on. Let me pull that up. And essentially, as we sit right this moment, I mean, this is hot off the press, I think I can say. It came in just this morning, because that's when this happened, was earlier today. And they haven't voted yet in Congress. But boy, is there a tug of war going on in terms of who's going to take blame. I don't think it's who's going to get credit. This is the annual, you know, Christmas vote that most of the time they just pass it. Both sides want to get home to the family and constituents, I guess, for town halls and Christmas parties and whatnot. But anyway, our current debt level, according to this article, is $36 trillion. They start off the article with that, just so you can understand how dire the debt situation is, and yet we've also got a dire situation in terms of keeping government open past midnight tonight. So there's a lot of shenanigans going on. There's a lot of pork that's being jammed into a bill that I believe before yesterday, Plan A was 1,500 pages. And just think about that. I mean, how is anybody going to read 1,500 pages before they vote? And so the answer is they won't. Nobody does. Well, you know, apparently the X platform had a bunch of people, just normal people like you and I, that did dig in. They parsed it up into sections, and they did read through it and see all the stuff that different constituencies of Congress wanted, and they had jammed them into this unbelievably expensive bill. But in any event, let's see here, let me scan this article real quick, because I was just looking at what the price tag had done. It was still insane. They cut the pages down to, I believe, 160 instead of 1,500, but the dollars really hadn't changed. And of course, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are the ones leading the charge, which really is starting to rub some of Congress wrong. And you know, I guess all I'll say is you guys have done a great job of messing the fiscal state of affairs up when it comes to the U.S. budget. How about you let some business folks take a chance at it? They couldn't do any worse, as I see it. But, you know, I guess, you know, I'm, you know, not in the fray. So maybe I know Mike Johnson probably feels like he's being punched around like a rag doll. But hey, he's been in Congress for a while, and he's, I'm going to say, just as culpable, all the Republicans are, as the Democrats. I mean, yeah, you can look, if you want to look at the list of the 38 that voted against Plan B yesterday, which I believe Mr. Trump even supported to an extent. And I know it's never going to be perfect when you've got such a slim majority, but anyway, the House negotiator, the Republican negotiators anyway, have reached an agreement on a Plan C, And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I suspect the Democrats still think they'll be able to offload the blame to the Republicans if it can't get taxed. But, you know, part of the issue here is the debt limit is coming up for discussion. And obviously it's going to have to be renewed at some level. And I believe Mr. Trump is wanting that to be handled in this particular legislation. So that had been removed from Plan B. It wasn't in Plan A, and then I believe it was added to Plan B, and it's also in Plan C. And they want to, oh, wait a minute, Plan C, they're saying it would involve an agreement. They will agree to act on the debt limit next year as part of the Republicans' planned massive conservative policy of overhaul via reconciliation, which allows them to have fewer votes to get it passed. Of course, it comes with some other strings that are attached, but in any event, the new strategy comes after President-elect Trump and his allies in Congress torpedoed congressional lawmakers' initial plans to avoid a partial shutdown ahead of the holidays. Mr. Trump had called on the Republicans to act on the debt limit as part of their talks to avert the shutdown, a demand that dozens of conservative lawmakers bristled at, given their concerns about the national debt. That would be folks like Nancy Mace, Chip Roy, Thomas Massie. I mean, the true conservative side, there were 38. I don't remember all the names, but they're the ones that, you know, if you follow the national political scene, you would expect to bristle at acting on the debt limit now, because it's like, historically, you know, this happens at the end of a year when there's very little time left, and it's like, trust us, you don't need to know what's in it, let's pass it, because if we don't, the government will shut down. Well, you know what, I think we're probably at a point where the government needs to shut down. If they can't get their act together, we're still fighting over a budget. We've not passed a budget in many years now. We keep doing the continuing resolutions. The CR is the term that you hear. And this is insanity. And at the same time, the dollars are just unbelievable that are getting flushed into these last-minute deals. And it's because the people demanding it know that it can't get looked at and negotiated in the time that remains before the government will shut down. So maybe they need to let the government shut down and then undertake serious discussions on what constitutes necessary spending instead of all the pork. But in any event, last night is when they voted on, or last, you know, Thursday evening, yesterday evening was when the plan by Speaker Johnson to follow President Trump's directives went down in flames after 38 Republicans again said no, this is still way too much money. So it'll be interesting to see what happens today. The Plan C should get a vote today. I don't think it's happened yet, or at least this article as of 11:30 Eastern time, so that'd been 10:30 Central, it had not been voted on. But anyway, it's an amazing process that happens every year, and I'll tell you, the budget is just something that seems like only becomes something anybody cares about working on when you've got the threat of a shutdown hanging over. But anyway. Okay, well, let's see. Let's go ahead and take a break, and then when we come back, I want to get into the risk factors that we utilize for calculating fair market values on Roth conversions, and then collaterally, these are the risk factors that you should consider as you're looking to invest in these types of partnership syndications, because these are the ones that, undertaken properly and in the right locations with the right management and leadership, can return significantly higher than average rates of return consistently, not the yo-yo type that we've seen even recently with the stock market. So we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And just wanted to mention that, as you know, if you listen to the show from time to time, that we are not providing you with legal, tax, or other accounting advice. And, you know, if you want that type of advice, well, then we obviously recommend you connect with a professional advisor, whether that's us or someone else. But until we've engaged, you know, there's no such advice provided or advice provided. I also want to mention that real estate private partnership syndications that we're getting ready to discuss an offering involve multiple investors who passively pool their funds in a partnership under the Security Exchange Commission's crowdfunding statute. And so you want to make sure, that's probably the first thing I'll mention that you should consider, that's not really a risk factor, but it's definitely the way you should seek to invest, so that you'll at least have some protections from the statute that's been around since, I believe, the Obama administration was in controlling government when that first passed. But the syndicator, the sponsor, lead partner, whatever you choose to call that party, serves as the manager who's responsible for choosing a property, performing due diligence, arranging its acquisition, including undertaking the necessary debt placement and equity raise. Those are big undertakings, and this is one of the reasons we like multifamily versus single family, because you have other folks that are doing all the above. And when you think about just getting the financing for the property, that's a big deal. And if you got somebody else handling that, also going on the debt, quote unquote, which we would suggest is, you know, not only finding a lender, but then qualifying as a, you know, non-recourse guarantor in most cases. It could be full recourse, but it's not going to be either for you as a passive partner. And that's very important, unless you've got a huge balance sheet, you've got plenty of money to lose if, you know, things went south and there was a reason why your guarantee would be called. And again, on the qualified non-recourse, non being the critical description there, it's not the economy went bad and therefore we couldn't pay the loan back. It would be nefarious actions, what we call the bad, pardon the misogyny here in this term, but it would be the bad boy provisions, where someone on your staff absconded with the rents for this month or did something that was likely criminal in nature. That's when you would have to step in if you're one of the guarantors and make the payments on the debt. So typically, most projects that are, again, it's a good reason to use a quality syndicator or sponsor, you will not be in that role. And I would also suggest the hiring process that most use would involve some security bonds and things of that nature to cover those types of losses. But anyway, the manager role is also tasked with managing the ongoing operations of the partnership and its assets. So they would undertake things like refinancing. They would engage professionals to prepare tax returns, including a K-1 that you would receive for the tax reporting that you'll undertake on at your level with your 1040. We do not sell investments, nor do we recommend or promote specific investments, and we will assist with your understanding, you know, when you initially start looking at a partnership, if you're working with us, or a partnership opportunity that a given sponsor, syndicator, lead partner is offering, we will assist with your understanding of what you're signing up for, because the private placement memorandums and the investment seminars or webinars offer a lot of information. It's more than a drive-by. It's like a fire hydrant of information that has many assumptions built in that may or may not be rational, given the location, given the age, given the assumptions using bad information for pro forma projections, the property, the valuation that's being used to ascertain how much your investment will cost you. All these things are very subjective, and those are some of the risks that we'll talk about momentarily. But in any event, we will show you what you're signing up for, and further, we'll show you over time, we'll teach you how to evaluate or evaluate sponsors, opportunities, and private placement offerings, so you can select projects that at least may achieve the highest odds of a favorable outcome, and there's no guarantees. I mean, the market we've had in the last two or three years, especially the debt structure, and then you add on the increase in insurance cost and the increase in property taxes. There's a lot of variables there that can go into determining success. And, we try to help point out some of these things and give you suggestions on what to ask of the lead partner to try to get some confidence. But anyway, we employ multiple valuation mechanisms when we're looking at, these particular opportunities that try to assess the volatility, the limited market liquidity, and then, what's the transaction volume? Because that in and of itself is a risk. And anyway, lenders typically, at least these days, are wary about financing and refinancing, because refinancing is a interim exit step that many of the multifamily properties undertake. And, as an example, when an acquisition occurs, there's usually a period, unless you acquire a perfect property, which that in and of itself has issues and still involves projections. You're trying to figure out what's this property going to increase up to in value, because that's the only way you make money, truly, in multifamily real estate. I'm not saying you might not make money on the cash flow. You may, but the real money is made when you take a old asset with deferred maintenance, you make it nice and new or newer, and get the rents as a result. You can get the rents up to a more market competitive level, and that should provide additional net operating income. Rents go up, expenses may go up, but in many cases they go down. It's a more efficient operation, and the bottom line will increase. And that's the number that we're looking to increase to make money. And combined with a bank or a lender's cap rate that they'll capitalize that earnings stream at, that gets us to a value. And if that earnings stream is higher, obviously the value typically will be higher. Now, there has been situations more recently where interest rates are moving up at the same time, and that tends to put a damper on the cap rate. And you can think of the value of the property as moving in a different direction than the interest and cap rate. So if the interest rates are going up, property value is typically going down. And if the interest rates are going down, the property value would be going up. And in any event, so when we look at a private placement memorandum, there's, and it's generally probably minimum 25 to 30 page document, and could be much longer. One that I have in front of me is in the 30 to 40 page range. And the memorandum discloses all manner of things. What's a summary of the company undertaking the project, the type of management. Is it going to be self-managed or is it going to be farmed out? Number of units that are going to be sold. The type of securities, meaning are they offered under 506B or C? Those are the two statutory sections that are the most common in the crowdfunding space, for real estate at least. How long will the offering be open for people to participate in, which is typically based on the amount of capital that's trying to be raised. What the location and name of the properties are that are being acquired. It's going to discuss the investor suitability, and that depends on, again, which section of the crowdfunding statute it's being offered under. And, you know, if you're accredited, you can participate in either the 506B or the 506C variety. And, of course, accredited is a status of someone that has at least $1 million in net worth, excluding the equity in their home, or someone that is earning, depending on whether you're single or married, but $200,000 to $300,000 is the range involved for at least 2 years, and you're on your way to that in a third year. So there's a couple ways to achieve accredited status. And then if you work in certain industries like financial planning and have a certain license, you too could be accredited without having the multi or the $1 million net worth or the income requirement. But in any event, there's also a discussion of the use of financing, and that's an area that I would tell you to look at very carefully to make sure that you won't be asked at some point to sign as a guarantor or a co-guarantor on the debt. And especially if you're using your retirement funds to invest, I would tell you with your retirement funds, I would find there to be very few cases where I would suggest that you try to be a guarantor. And in fact, I would tell you in most cases, it would be a prohibited transaction under ERISA, and it may or may not, even be allowed. So, most of the syndicators, depending on what level of sophistication you're dealing with on the syndicator team, they need to keep an eye on how many percentage or how many units as a percentage wise are being sold, because there's a level that you no longer qualify for the operating company exemption under the plan asset rule. And these are terms that you won't know about now perhaps, but someday you will, and you want to keep an eye on that area of any partnership you invest in, because once you go over the allowable limit of 25% in fiduciary investments like 401s and IRAs, then the team manager or the manager of the project will be deemed to be a fiduciary, and then you've got assorted problems getting exited out of that investment. So I'll just mention, if you're going to invest your retirement money, you better make sure that you're investing with a team that understands the plan asset rule, and make sure that somebody's got their eye on the ball when they're raising capital to make sure that they don't breach that rule. The PPM or the private placement memorandum also points out the fees that are going to be charged by the syndicator and how they're going to be funded. And in many cases, they'll be paid out of capital contributions. In most cases, they will be capital contributions, or some fees are paid out of revenues and reserves. And again, there's always a section. It's mandated under the 506 statute, or I believe it's Rule 5 is how it's referred to be disclosed. Conflicts of interest. And this is something that, boy, it's really hard to get your hands around what the conflicts really are. The language that you're going to see in these private placements is very broad. I'll just read you. Here's an example. The manager and its affiliates may engage in and possess interest or own interest in other business ventures of any and every type or description. Very broadly defined. Independently or with other investors, whether similar or dissimilar to the company's business. Neither the company nor any investor shall have any right, title, or interest in or to such independent ventures. Managers and affiliates may conduct similar investment offerings through any such independent venture without liability to the company, meaning your investment that you're investing in, for so doing. The manager and its affiliates are under no obligation to present any investment opportunity to the company, even if such opportunity is of a character that, if presented to the company, could be acquired by the company for its own account. So, in any event, that's broad enough to where you can understand your manager is able to pursue other transactions at the same time your transaction is underway. Let's see here. Let's move on down to the investment and offering risk. And I guess I would say the one I just read you is probably one of the key ones there. But first thing to note is that this investment is not a diversified investment, because the company in this case intends to invest in only one property as an investment of the company, and therefore your investment that you're putting money into, it is not a diversified investment. Doesn't have multiple locations, doesn't have multiple consumer types. Essentially, the poor performance of this property could adversely affect the profitability of the company. The next risk factor that we would consider is the investment it's speculative. And I know we know that intuitively, but the SEC likes to see this spelled out. And you have to understand the company's business objectives are highly speculative. No assurance can be given that the prospective investors will realize their investment objectives or will realize a substantial return, if any, on their investment, or that they will not lose their entire investment in the company. Most people aren't thinking that surely that couldn't happen with this deal. I mean, this deal is can't miss. It's a slam dunk. Well, a lot of things in life appear to be that way, right? So you need to make sure that at least the assumptions that underlie this investment, one, yield a value that syncs up to the amount that you're putting money in for, so that you have at least the legitimate, a rational expectation that you will make money and get your capital back. The company cannot assure that the offering price of units, this is still another risk, is an accurate reflection of their value. These are not easily comparable investments. I mean, there's things we look at to generally get some idea of, rational assumptions. But understand, the offering price of units has been determined by the company itself. These are the people that are getting fees out of your capital. So you can't trust. You can hardly verify. I mean, unless you understand the markets, and we try to. We subscribe to real estate data in about 20 different markets, so we know what the current reality is of the growth rate of rents on existing properties. We know how many units are in the pipeline for delivery over the next 12 to 24 months, because that affects the ability for your project to achieve its goal of occupancy, high occupancy, because that's what makes money. And so just understand, there's no guarantee the company, the value that they're selling you these units for has you know, significant validity. They're using assumptions that they've been able to put their hands on, but they're usually a little bit rosier than what might happen. I mean, it has to go up, right? You think you're ever going to get a private placement memorandum, PPM, that shows the value of the property declining over the next 5 to 7, 8 years? No, they all go up. That's how you make money. And so you've also got to consider the operating expenses, prospects, the number of securities to be offered, and the general condition of the securities market, all as they are assessed by the management of the company, the manager, effectively. And you have to understand that they are not directly correlated to the company's assets, earnings, and tangible net or net book value, okay, or any other traditional criteria of value. And for folks that are experienced in buying into these partnerships, this is old news. You understand, but it comes back to what I've said many times. You're investing on faith with the parties that are managing the transaction. And unfortunately, in most cases, you won't know those people, and you're looking at resumes that'll be attached. You're trying to get some information on the track record, the history of earlier transactions they've done. And these are things that, again, you most likely should consider engaging with folks in the business of advising and or investing in these type of transactions. Let's do this. I went a little bit past our break time. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and when we come back, we'll have about 10 minutes left on the balance of the show. We'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee.
With big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I've only got a few minutes here to get through the rest of these risk factors, and I may need to break it up into this week's show and then next week as well. But anyway, I'm going to skip forward from the investment and offering risk category of risk into the operational risk. And one of the big ones is the manager with the significant flexibility with respect to engaging vendors, contractors, et cetera, or buying properties. And, you know, these are all operational and investment oriented. There could be conflicts of interest because these negotiations often are not undertaken on an arm's length basis. And in fact, in some cases, the manager himself or herself may have a separate company, like a management company, that they engage for the partnership, and that gives them considerable discretion with respect to the decisions related to the terms and the timing of transactions they're undertaking. And so, you know, you when you invest in the multifamily private partnership space, it's pretty much a given. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing because somebody's got to make those decisions. And unfortunately, given the time constraints and given other variables that you're juggling, it's often not possible to take the time to go find something that you already have. It's more efficient. You've probably got, in the most lead partners case, you've probably got multiple properties. You can share resources. It's a better deal for the partnership in most cases. Unfortunately, in some cases, it's more a risk of, you know, malfeasance. And so, you know, these are things that every investor has to deal with and understand the questions that should be asked and understand the provisions that should be provided in an operating agreement, which is the manual or Bible for how any given partnership is going to be operated, or LLC is that operating agreement, which that's one of the documents we review as thoroughly as possible, depending on whether it's a draft at the point we get it or whether it's final. And oftentimes the operating agreements aren't done until literally days or even hours before closing on a given transaction. But in any event, the significant conflicts of interest can arise between the company, the manager, and or its affiliates. The manager and its affiliates may engage in other activities, as we mentioned earlier, because they give themselves that right in the operating agreement. And some of those activities may directly compete with the company and or the property. The liability of the management is limited, just like they have the right to do certain things. The ability for them to be indemnified, or the provision that they're indemnified from certain undertakings, is also provided. And I'll just read you a typical. It says, as a result of certain indemnification provisions in the operating agreement, the manager and its officers, employees, agents, attorneys, and certain other parties may not be liable to the company or its members for errors of judgment or other acts or omissions not constituting. So there are some exceptions. Fraud, intentional misconduct, criminal act, or gross negligence is not going to be something that the team will be indemnified for. But a successful claim for indemnification would deplete the assets of the company by the amount paid. So consider that before you run out and sue your lead partner. Look at what it might cost you and make sure there's a valid reason and that you can recover or call back some of the damages. Okay, let's get on into the real estate risk. you know, these are probably commonsensical, although I'm going to suggest most of these applied to the home you live in. If you bought your home, it's not, you know, this is not new territory. You could have adverse changes in local and national economic conditions. You could have financial condition of the buyers and sellers of similar properties. You could have a change in the availability of debt financing and refinancing. That's a big one we've seen lately, and it hadn't ended. There's many billions of dollars that are represented by, you know, short-term bridge debt with a three-year trigger that was undertaken 2 years ago. So 2025 is going to be a real difficult period for properties that have to refinance. And even if they've got an extension option, you still have to qualify for that. So changes in the availability of debt financing and refinancing is one of the top of the list items. Of course, if you've already invested your money, you're not really in a position to make this a criteria. But I would tell you, we're looking at this on the front end. In the case of a private placement memorandum, you want to make sure you've got a longer debt term with hopefully agency debt, you know, a Freddie or Fannie type loan, because that's got a guarantee to the lender. So they tend to give you longer, typically 7 to 10 year terms. Let's see what else. So changes in market cap rates, absolutely something that you don't control. It's not your fault, but it's your problem when it happens. And so you want to look at enough capital being raised to weather the storms that that can cause. Let's see what else. Yeah, let's go on down to I guess this is still under the property. The property may have, or real estate in general, and certainly any given property, may have a long-term outlook in terms of the liquidity of the investor, and it may be difficult to sell when you see market or economic changes. So you've got to be prepared. Again, it's being adequately capitalized or having partners that have the ability to borrow and make cash calls or fund cash calls. The properties can be subjected to additional risks that may adversely impact the operating results. That could come from the leasing market. It could come from management changes. There's many reasons that that category can pop up. And, you know, substantial rental concessions like we're having right now, I think across the country, it's an average of 10%. In any event, we will come back next Thursday and pick up on this list because we really haven't gotten to the good ones, at least with respect to the Roth conversion. So we'll circle back next Friday at 11 a.m. right here on 700 AM KSEV. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.